E-commerce business owners know the best way to run a successful business is to keep their customers happy. You build trust with your customers one package at a time. That's why smart retailers use ShipStation. ShipStation helps you run the smoothest order fulfillment process possible and cut costs, not corners. ShipStation streamlines all your orders from everywhere you sell into one easy-to-use dashboard, prints shipping labels, manages returns, and tracks inventory. You can even automate repetitive tasks so your team makes fewer errors. Plus, they get you the lowest possible carrier rates. You'll save up to 88% off UPS, USPS, and DHL Express, and up to 90% off FedEx rates. When shoppers choose to buy your products, turn them into loyal customers with cheaper, faster, and better shipping. Go to ShipStation.com/program to sign up for your free trial. There's no credit card or contract required, and you can cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com/program.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
On October 18th, 2011, T.J. Murray, a 23-year-old beloved son and brother, went bar hopping with a friend in Spring, Texas. After getting into altercations at a couple bars, TJ was last seen walking away from Rookie Sports Bar at 12:37 a.m. on what was now the 19th. During a subsequent investigation, detectives came to the conclusion that TJ was murdered after he left the bar. However, despite many searches, his remains have never been located. It's been over 12 years since TJ disappeared, and the family is still desperate for answers. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so the case of TJ Murray, I have to be honest with you. I really racked my brain on this one, and I had to step back and remind myself that I'm not the lead investigator on this case. I have a plethora of notes. I've watched a few YouTube videos. I've looked at the research. I've looked at the different maps that are out there. I've listened to a couple podcasts, and I've come to the conclusion that I have enough to tell the story, but I'm not going to be able to solve this case from this desk. And that's a hard pill to swallow. It's sometimes difficult for me to take off the detective hat and put on the storyteller hat, which is a part of what I'm doing here. My job is to make sure that I tell that story as accurately as I can, and to try and have enough information to make a reasonable opinion on what I think happened in this case. And I'll tell you right off the bat, without going into it too much, there's so many scenarios that could have played out here based on the circumstances surrounding this case. And I have gone through many of them. I probably won't go through all of them in the episode for the sake of time, but I really want to dive into this episode because I don't know how it's going to play out after editing. It could be a long one. So let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into this case. Thomas Charles Murray Jr., known as TJ, was born on November 23, 1987 in Montgomery, Texas, to parents Janelle and Thomas Sr. TJ's childhood was marked by multiple near-death experiences. At the age of 5, he was diagnosed with leukemia, which he survived and went into remission. Then years later, TJ was in a horrible car accident, which he also managed to survive. From a young age, TJ's life revolved around sports. He and his 3 younger brothers especially loved baseball. TJ played for his high school team, and he would also umpire Little League games. And from what I researched, TJ's father was also a prominent coach in the area as well. After graduating from high school, TJ went on to Sam Houston State University, also known as SHSU, in Huntsville, Texas, where he majored in psychology and business. While at SHSU, TJ lived with his 2 cousins, but he frequently spent time back in Montgomery with his close-knit family. TJ's dad told the media that TJ was someone who, quote, loved his family and, quote, kept in contact all the time. He described his son as a very vivacious young man who was outgoing and very generous. On the evening of Tuesday, October 18th, 2011, TJ, who was now a 23-year-old junior at SHSU, umpired a Little League baseball game. Then, at around 10 p.m., he drove his dad's Ford F-150 to Spring, Texas, to go bar hopping with his friend Jeff. TJ and Jeff met at On the Rock Sports Bar, located at 592 Sawdust Road, and they played pool while they were there. At one point, TJ called his dad and told him he was leaving his truck at On the Rocks, and he and Jeff were driving over to the 19th Hole Grill and Bar, which was located at 202 Sawdust Drive, right on the corner of Sawdust Drive and Borough Park Road. And I mentioned Borough Park Road because that's going to come into the story in a little bit. It'll make more sense. It is important to note that at this point during this call, TJ's father, Tom, stated that TJ did not sound intoxicated. Now, there is some information about the 19th Hole Grill and Bar that is up for question. I listened to the Uncovered podcast, so shout out to them. And apparently there was an altercation with a couple and TJ while at that bar. Now, the host of the Uncovered podcast later said that he spoke to Jeff, and Jeff was the one who had given this account to police. But at this point, like 9 years later, when this interview was done, Jeff didn't recall any altercation at the 19th hole. But if we're to take it at face value, according to the report, there was something that went down there. And because of that, Jeff and TJ decided to leave and go over to the Rookie Sports Bar, which was located at 305 Sawdust Drive, just a short distance away, well within walking distance. And I do want to point out that all 3 of these locations that we're discussing, On the Rocks, the 19th hole, and Rookie Sports Bar, they're all fairly close to each other. You could probably walk to all 3 locations, even though they decided to take a car from On the Rocks to 19th hole. But when you're looking at the map, you will see that these different establishments are not far from each other. Now, at around midnight, TJ called Tom to check in again, and according to Tom, he sounded normal and not overly intoxicated. And according to Dateline, while TJ was at Rookies, Jeff called TJ's brother James and told him that TJ needed to be picked up because he was about to get into a fight. So James headed that way to pick up his brother. Now, in regards to this fight that took place at Rookies, I had watched this YouTube interview with the lead detective, who I'm going to talk about in a little bit. It was called Crime Scene Today. You can go watch it. And there wasn't any specific mention of this incident, but again, going off the Uncovered podcast, allegedly, TJ slapped a woman while at Rookies, and he was kicked out of the establishment because of that, if you're to believe it. That's what we are left to believe at this point. And as far as why it happened, we really don't know. The only thing that was mentioned in Crime Scene Today was that the individuals at Rookies, and I'm talking about TJ, Jeff, and this other couple, including this woman, they all knew each other. They were from the area. I wouldn't say they were best friends, but they were all familiar with each other. Why this altercation occurred, we really don't know at this point. And I just want to reiterate, in this Crime Scene Today interview, there's no mention by the detective that TJ slapped this individual. So we're going off the Uncovered podcast and the host who interviewed Jeff directly, who was at the bar and would know what happened inside. But I don't have any firsthand account of it, and I can't find anywhere where the detective confirmed this. So just keep that in mind as we go forward. So as I was just mentioning, TJ's little brother James was on his way to pick him up. But before James could get there, Tom received a third and final call from TJ. This call came in around 12:30 a.m. on what was now October 19th. At this point, TJ sounded very intoxicated as he told Tom he was kicked out of Rookies and was separated from his friend Jeff. TJ went on to tell his dad that he didn't plan on driving home that evening. He would get a ride home with a friend. He also promised to bring his dad's truck back to him the next day. He would just bring it over to Oak Ridge High School where Tom worked. After this call, Tom didn't hear from TJ again. At some point after TJ got off the phone with Tom, James arrived to give TJ a ride home, but he couldn't find TJ anywhere. James eventually went home after he wasn't able to find his brother. At that same time, Jeff, who was with TJ most of the night, attempted to call and text TJ, but he never responded. Jeff remained at the bar for a while after TJ left, but TJ never returned, so Jeff eventually left as well. Now, this is another situation where you might want to go watch the Crime Scene Today interview with Detective Risk. He talks about this and talks about the fact that the couple who was at the bar, who had been in the altercation with TJ and Jeff, remained at the bar for a while, maybe 20 to 30 minutes. So as far as them being involved, it's not completely impossible, but highly unlikely. They were seen on camera multiple times at this location well after TJ was already gone. So for any of you who are asking how long the friend and this couple was at the bar after TJ left, let's just say to be safe, maybe 20 to 30 minutes. Now, in the daylight hours of October 19th, James and Tom still hadn't heard from TJ, so they went to Sawdust Road where he was last seen. They didn't find TJ, but they did locate the F-150, which was still parked it on the rocks. There was no evidence of anyone trying to get inside or use the truck throughout the night. James later told NBC, quote, "We knew something was wrong immediately. He was very responsible. He definitely would never drive drunk, but first thing in the morning, he would have gone back and gotten that truck. It was my dad's, and he wouldn't just leave it." TJ also wouldn't ignore their calls and texts asking where he was and if he was okay. This led them to the conclusion that something was definitely wrong. According to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, also known as NAMIS, in the mid-morning hours of October 19th, TJ's cell phone was located north of Rookies in the 2500 block of Borough Park Drive. Now, I did mention this earlier to you about Borough Park Drive, which is where the 19th hole was located, right on kind of the corner there. And if I didn't say it earlier, let me say it now. When TJ was last seen leaving Rookies Bar, he headed south, away from Sawdust Drive. The 19th hole in this area of Sawdust Drive and Borough Park Road would have been in the opposite direction, north. So the location of where this phone was recovered was in the opposite direction of where TJ was last seen walking. I also want to put out there that I'm not 100% sure who the phone was recovered by. Was it a witness? Was it TJ's family? Or was it the police? I tend to believe it was the police based on the Crime Scene Today interview, the way it was described by Detective Risk. But I will say one important note about the phone, probably the most important piece of information to take from this, is that when the phone was recovered, the back of the phone was off and the battery was out. What that means, we'll get into that more in the perspective. Now, it's also unclear when TJ's family officially filed a missing persons report with the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office. What we do know is that Tom called a friend in law enforcement and they started trying to figure out if TJ was really missing or if there was something else going on. Now, Detective Risk, who, by the way, his name is spelled R-I-Z-K, so it could be Rizik. I think it's Risk based on what I was hearing in the Crime Scene Today interview, but if I got it wrong, I apologize. He eventually became the lead detective on this case. He's the one that I mentioned earlier a couple times. And he would later explain to Crime Scene Today that Tom was a prominent member of the Montgomery County community and was close to several high-ranking members of law enforcement. Risk said that these people helped Tom and TJ's disappearance in a, quote, off-the-books manner for several days after his disappearance. When they determined that TJ was indeed missing, the sheriff's office launched an official investigation. Now, as I mentioned earlier, TJ was 23 years old. You can take this however you want to take it. I think depending on who you are, you might have handled it differently. It looks like Tom was trying to confirm that TJ was in fact in danger or he was in fact missing. So they were doing what they thought was right at the time. And I'm sure in Tom's mind, having his friends who were in law enforcement working the case for him, he probably felt like he was getting all the attention he would get if he even filed a report. The problem with that is, and we're going to talk about this more at the end, but there is video footage that was taken at the 19th hole But by the time detectives went over there to actually retrieve it, it had already been written over. Could that have been a critical piece of information in the case? Possible. We do know that after the 19th hole, TJ and Jeff went to another bar, Rookies. But still, would I, as an investigator, would I like to have that video surveillance and as part of my evidence? Absolutely. Would they have had it if Tom had filed a report immediately? I don't know. I don't know what the sense of urgency would have been or if things would have went the exact same way they did. But depending on who you are watching or listening to this episode, you can have your own opinion on that, and that's quite all right. Tom, TJ's father, decided to take this approach. I don't know if he is still happy with that approach to this day, but either way, I don't think it would have made a dramatic difference in this case because more than likely we'd still be in the same position that we are today, and that's not knowing where TJ is. On October 25th, the police held a press conference to mark 1 week since TJ went missing. They said they were looking for witnesses and that there was no indication of foul play. However, they did acknowledge that it was, quote, unusual for TJ not to have contact with family members. Tom also spoke at the conference and said, quote, I believe someone out there knows where my son is, so please help us in any way possible. He went on to say, quote, we have no leads at this time. Please, please, if you can help us get our son back. Someone knows where he's at. I don't. We're all worried. We just want him back. On October 26th, law enforcement and volunteers searched a wooded area southeast of the bar where TJ was last seen, but nothing of note was found. The next day, on October 27th, Texas Equisearch focused on a heavily wooded area around Interstate 45 near the Hardy Toll Road. They were looking in a specific area because a suspicious car had been reported under a bridge on the night TJ disappeared, but again, nothing of note was located. That day, Tom told the media that he hadn't heard any leads from the police. He said, quote, we're out here in limbo. I know they're doing their job and what they have to do, and like they said, when we find something that we need to talk to you, we'll let you know. We still have a lot more to cover, but before we do, let's take our first break.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Now, Tom said he was worried that someone did something to TJ. However, he didn't know of anyone who would want to hurt his son. He said, quote, he's a very social young man. He doesn't have any enemies that I'm aware of. Everybody loves him. I'm nervous. And I want to try to keep it all together without showing the emotion that I have inside, but I'm scared, sad. We just want our boy back. Texas Equisearch continued searching for TJ until early November. At that point, the searches were discontinued until police had more leads for them. But unfortunately, there weren't any new leads. In fact, the police were fighting an uphill battle. The lead detective on the case, Detective Risk, who I mentioned earlier, later told Crime Scene Today that social media was a major hindrance in TJ's case. He went on to explain that any step the sheriff's office took was recorded on Facebook. He believed that with so much visibility on social media, detectives lost the advantage of having behind-the-scenes knowledge that could be held back from the public. Listen, we all know by this point, social media can be a blessing or a curse when it comes to active investigations. In many instances, especially cold cases, kind of like we're doing right here now, social media can be a huge asset and a major tool. But initially, if everyone's sharing what the detectives are doing online, yes, that's available for the public to be up to date on it. And there may be good intentions behind it, you know, just wanting to share this information with everyone who's concerned, not only about TJ, but about anyone else who could be at risk. But there's another side to this. In addition to those people having information about the investigation, there's a potential that the offender or the offenders in TJ's case are also getting this information. So they are now aware of the steps that are being taken by investigators, which can help them avoid detection and apprehension. Additionally, we always talk about guilt knowledge and having information that's withheld from the public so that when witnesses or people involved come forward, you can ask them questions about the case. And if they provide certain details that haven't been released to the public, that's an ability to gauge their credibility without them even knowing it. You lose that tool and that asset as a detective when all the information's already out there. So on one hand, I do love what social media can do in an investigation. It's an extremely valuable tool, but there are drawbacks. And as investigators, we have to find that balance. Now, on November 22nd, a little over a month had passed since TJ disappeared. His mom, Janelle, provided an update stating that family and friends were asked to give DNA samples to authorities and that detectives were combing through phone records for any leads. Janelle went on to say that she didn't know what the police were looking for, but she had to maintain hope that her oldest son was okay. She said, quote, "We have to believe if he's anywhere, he's fighting or surviving." The family started offering a $5,000 reward for any information about TJ's whereabouts or what occurred on the night of his disappearance. TJ's classmates at Sam Houston State University also began selling wristbands for $5 each to help fund the reward for information related to TJ's disappearance. The wristband sales were able to boost the reward to $10,000, and later the Murray family doubled that reward, bringing the total to $20,000. But according to the Houston Item, by December, detectives still didn't have any solid leads in TJ's disappearance. The investigation continued with detectives putting together a timeline of TJ's movements on the night of October 18th and the morning of October 19th. Using witness testimony, cell phone records, and surveillance footage, detectives were able to learn that TJ's night began at On the Rocks Bar, where he and his friend Jeff played pool without incident. Before heading to the next bar, TJ called his dad and said he was leaving his truck at On the Rocks. And just a reminder, according to Tom, he didn't sound intoxicated at that time. TJ then got in the car with his friend Jeff and went to a nearby bar called the 19th Hole. And as I mentioned earlier, lead detective Riss told Crime Scene Today that they were unable to obtain the surveillance footage from that location because the tapes had been written over. However, the police were able to learn that while at the 19th Hole, TJ got into a verbal altercation with a couple. Now, from what we know, TJ and Jeff left the bar without security stepping in. Then at around midnight, TJ called his dad to check in again. He sounded normal during this call as well. TJ and Jeff then went to Rookies, and while there, TJ got into another altercation with some acquaintances. And as I mentioned earlier, there are some allegations that TJ slapped a woman while he was there. And again, I tend to believe it based on where it's coming from. You can go listen to the Uncovered podcast if you want to as well, but based on what the host is saying and who he spoke to directly, Jeff, I tend to believe this account, and it would make sense for why TJ was asked to leave by security. I wouldn't even say asked. According to this report, he was forced to leave. He was removed from the location. Now, Jeff witnessed all of this, and he called TJ's brother to let him know that he should come pick his brother up, and according to Jeff, he went to the bathroom. And while doing so, security escorted TJ out of the bar, which was caught on surveillance. TJ then waited a few minutes out front, most likely to see if Jeff would follow him out, but he never came outside. As Detective Riss told Crime Scene Today that there wasn't any surveillance footage showing anyone else outside with TJ that included his friend Jeff or the people that he had gotten into the altercation with. The only thing that we know is that Jeff tried calling and texting TJ from inside the bar, but TJ did not answer. At around 12:30 a.m., TJ called his dad for the third and final time, and he sounded, quote, trashed at this point. TJ mentioned that he'd been kicked out of the bar, but he wasn't going to drive home. He also said he would make sure that his dad's truck was back to him by the next day. TJ was never heard from again. Now, surveillance shows that at 12:37 a.m., TJ walked south of the bar on the sidewalk and out of frame. This was the last time he was ever seen, and no one was following TJ from the bar, and there was also no indications of a struggle or accident near the bar. Detective Riss said it was unclear where TJ was walking to. There wasn't really anywhere for him to go. The bar was located in a business district, so besides the other open bars, there weren't any other open businesses for him to go to. And like I said earlier, TJ's cell phone was eventually recovered north of Rookies, which was in the opposite direction of where TJ was last seen walking. And despite reviewing traffic cameras near where the phone was recovered, detectives could not determine how it got there. There was also no footage of TJ going north. Now, we have more information to cover in this case, and we still have to go over my perspective. Let's take our final break and we'll keep going.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle. With ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Now, based on where the phone was found, the condition that it was found in, and the fact that they couldn't determine how it got there, Detective Riss believes that TJ, or at least his phone, was in a vehicle and had traveled north, and his phone was eventually tossed out the window. And according to investigators, that would explain why the battery in the back of the phone was detached when the phone was located. And I just want to go back to Rookies really quickly, because I know some of you, after hearing about the phone, are probably saying, these individuals have to be involved. Well, detectives went back and spoke to the security team at Rookies, and they specifically said that they would not let this group that had the altercation with TJ leave until TJ had already been gone for a little while. And so, like I said earlier in the episode, maybe 20 to 30 minutes they were held there after TJ was removed from the establishment. And I think that's important to note. And if you don't want to believe the security team, maybe they're trying to cover their ass. Video surveillance showed this group leaving the bar at around 1 a.m. and arriving at another bar a bit further down the road only a short time later. This meant that there was around 23 minutes between TJ being last seen on camera at Rookies and this group leaving and going to another bar. Detectives came to the conclusion that this was not enough time for this group to hurt TJ, dispose of his remains, and then arrive at this next location. I also want to point out, because I'm sure some people will ask, Jeff did not go to the next bar with this group of individuals. Now, despite it being unlikely that they were involved, detectives did interview Jeff and the group that TJ had gotten into the altercation with. Detective Riss told Crime Scene Today that all parties were cooperative enough and that they all gave statements. The sheriff's office also polygraphed some of the individuals with no signs of deception. So it seemed very unlikely that these individuals were involved and they were all but ruled out. So based on all of this evidence, detectives now believe that foul play was involved in TJ Murray's disappearance. The investigation continued without any major updates for years. Sadly, the Murray family experienced another loss in July of 2012 when TJ's 21-year-old brother Will drowned while swimming in the Guadalupe River. Only 9 months had passed since TJ went missing, and now the Murray family lost another son and brother. TJ's brother James later told Dateline, quote, "It's just been really hard for my parents losing two sons. But at least we know what happened to Will. But what happened to TJ? That's something we just don't know." In May of 2015, nearly 4 years had passed since TJ went missing. At that time, the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office stated that they were still actively working on TJ's case. They said, quote, "It's frustrating for the family because we know they need answers. The case is still active, although there has not been a lot of activity in the past year." Now, as I've mentioned multiple times throughout this episode today, in May of 2020, the lead detective on TJ's case, Detective Risk, went on Crime Scene Today to discuss TJ's case. Now, during this interview, Risk addressed some of the rumors in this case. He said that some people believe it's possible a drunk driver struck TJ, killed him, panicked, and then hit his body. Risk all but dismissed this theory, declaring that while it may be possible, there was no evidence to suspect that any sort of accident occurred on that evening. There were no skid marks, debris, or bodily material found. Now, in this interview, Detective Risk revealed that the department actually believes TJ was murdered after he left the bar. When the host asked why someone would want to kill TJ, Risk said the detectives received information that TJ was a low-level marijuana dealer and was allegedly supposed to make a buy that night, so he probably had a lot of cash on him. In this conversation, Detective Risk speculated that if this whole incident did involve drugs, someone knew that he had a large sum of cash on him, and as soon as he left the bar, they could have robbed him and killed him. Risk continued by saying he believes TJ was picked up in a car while he was walking away from Rookies. The driver was most likely someone TJ knew, someone that knew he had money or drugs on him. That same person then took the battery out of TJ's phone and threw it out the window as they drove north of the bar. That way, TJ couldn't be tracked. TJ was eventually killed and his remains were left somewhere unknown to authorities. Risk ended by saying new information from someone who was there that night or knows who was there is necessary in order to find justice for TJ and his family. He asked that people come forward with what they know. There have been few updates in TJ's case since Detective Risk went on Crime Scene Today. The only update we were able to find was in August of 2021 when TJ's youngest brother Sam tragically passed away as well. This meant that Tom and Janelle Murray had lost 3 of their 4 sons. Today, TJ's case remains unsolved. We reached out to Detective Risk for a current update and he said the case was still open and active. Now, while he didn't say this, we know that the Murray family is desperate to find TJ and bring him home to rest. Okay, let's dive into the perspective, and I do apologize ahead of time. This may be a little scattered. I have pages of notes. I'm obviously not going to go over all of them. And it's not going to be as succinct here because I don't have just my bullet points. So you may see me skipping around a little bit. And if you're watching on YouTube, you may see me look down at my notebook a couple times because I want to make sure I hit a couple things. So I'm going to break this down by scenarios. And the first one we can talk about briefly is accident or suicide. There's no indication that TJ was in a state of mind where he wanted to harm himself. Yes, he was probably a little down that he got kicked out of the bar. But from the last conversation with his dad, he didn't seem like he was in a place where he was going to hurt himself. And if he had done that, I think we would have found him by now. Now, as far as the accident angle here, we can think about cases like Christopher Jenkins, which I covered on Breaking Homicide, if you're not familiar with that case out of Minnesota. And a more recent case that you would be familiar with is Riley Strain. Now, obviously different circumstances, but still a situation where we really didn't know what happened to Riley at first, and it wasn't until we were able to put everything together that it was determined that it was, in fact, just a tragic accident with Riley. Could you have a situation like that here? Of course it's possible, but looking at the map, I didn't see anything that was obvious to me where he could have injured himself and gotten hurt where we wouldn't have found him. And what I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about those types of places, I'm looking for large bodies of water. There's a couple ponds in the area, but nothing too deep or too extravagant. And again, you have to remember that a lot of people were searching for TJ, including Texas Equisearch. There are some wooded areas south of the business district that I guess he could be in, but we know there was extensive searches conducted. And I think at this point, they would have found him. If that's where he was, something would have been located, whether it was him or his remains, or just a piece of clothing or an item belonging to him, something would have been found at this point. And other than the phone, there's been nothing. Speaking of the phone, let's talk about it. First off, Crime Scene Today interview with Detective Risk. He did mention that there was no phone activity on TJ's phone after he left the bar and after he talked to Tom. So that's important to note. He wasn't conversating with anyone who could potentially be a suspect in this case. But as far as the physical phone itself and where it was located, as I mentioned multiple times, the phone was found north of Sawdust Drive, which is in the opposite direction of where TJ was last seen walking. So that's an issue. And I do think there's something to be said for that. But I don't want to completely discredit the idea that it's possible TJ brought the phone up that way. Maybe not to that exact location, but in that area. And the reason I say that is there is a world where for some reason he doubled back after going out of frame and maybe took a different route that wasn't caught on camera. If you go look at the map, there's the 45 highway there. Maybe he was under that area there. Maybe he went up a side street. Again, when you're intoxicated, you sometimes do things that doesn't make a lot of sense, but maybe he was trying to get back to his truck to maybe sleep for the night and he just went the wrong way. You would think that he would be seen somewhere on camera if that were the case. I just don't want to completely rule it out and automatically assume that whatever happened, happened south of Rookies and the phone was brought up there by an offender. Is that most likely the scenario? Yeah, and I'm going to get into that in a second, but we have to still explore and keep open all options. Speaking of the other scenarios involving the phone, as Detective Riss said, you could have a situation where the phone was thrown out the window by the offender. And for me, if that's the case, I don't see a situation where TJ would have gotten in the car voluntarily. If that's what we're to believe happened, more than likely as he was heading south, whether it was someone he knew or someone who had just been driving by and TJ was in the wrong place at the wrong time, someone got the drop on him. He was robbed or assaulted and rendered unable to defend himself and maybe not even conscious, maybe already deceased at that point, and he was put into the car against his will. And before I continue on with this scenario, because I haven't said it for this episode, I know detectives and everyone involved are assuming at this point that TJ is deceased, and that may be the case. We have to be reasonable in our investigatory practices and what the most likely scenario is. But the reality is we have not found him yet. And so for this case, I'll be labeling it as missing, not murdered, because we don't know that yet. We don't have a body and we can't say definitively that he's no longer with us. And I don't know how the Murray family feels about this right now, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm keeping all options open. And I say that to say you could have a situation where he was assaulted, maybe injured, and put in the car against his will, and maybe he was taken to another location. Could he still be alive? It's possible. Stranger things have happened. We can't act like it's never happened before. Is it the most likely scenario? Probably not. But is it still possible? Absolutely. Putting that aside for a second, let's just say for the sake of this conversation, he was attacked and he was put in the car against his will. Because again, I don't see a world where he's in the car voluntarily driving north and watching the driver or someone in the back seat take his phone and throw it out the window. I just don't see that happening. So in my opinion, it's highly likely if we're looking at the scenario, he is unable to do anything about his phone being disposed of at this point. So how was the phone disposed of? I see two scenarios. One, he's somewhere in the car. The offender takes the phone, throws it out the window, and as it hits the ground, it smashes, and that's how the battery in the back cover comes off. Or, as a deliberate action, the offender takes the back cover off, takes the battery out, and then throws it out the window. I don't really see that as a necessity in this case. If you're dumping the phone, you just want to make sure that the phone is no longer with your victim. And by dumping it out the window, whether the battery's attached or not, it really doesn't matter because the phone's there and you're going north. So you wouldn't have to go that extra step is what I'm saying. More than likely, the offender saw the phone, picked it up, chucked it out the window. And some people have speculated that the offenders would head north because that's towards Huntsville and there's a lot of swamps up there and then you obviously have gators. So if you were going to dispose of a body, that would be an ideal place to do it if you never wanted that body to be found. But I don't want to get too caught up on the north because regardless of how likely something may seem, that could be the exact reason why the offenders did it that way. What do I mean by that? There's a world where there's multiple offenders involved. there's a world where there's multiple cars involved. How do we know TJ wasn't attacked south of Rookies, put in one car, and someone in a different vehicle took the phone north, chucked it out the window to throw investigators off? You never know. We have to explore all scenarios. Do we have anything exculpatory ruling out that possible scenario? No, we do not. So as far as I'm concerned, it's still on the table. And finally, I want to end with the who. Who could have done this? We're going to go down the list. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. First person I want to mention is someone who maybe had an axe to grind with TJ. As I mentioned, he was at three different bars that night. In his travels, could someone who had a problem with him seen him at one of those locations and followed him around? Absolutely. This person could be someone who was just hovering in the background and didn't have any direct contact with him. But after leaving the bar, maybe they left shortly after, or maybe they made a phone call to someone, and that's when they got the drop on TJ after he left Rookies. This person could be someone who he had an altercation with in the past. This could be someone who he had a bad deal with if he was in fact dealing marijuana. Or this could be someone who knew he was a marijuana dealer, knew he may have a large amount of money or narcotics on him, and gave a call to one of their friends to say, hey, listen, TJ's here. When he leaves, I'll let you know. Because again, we don't have all the individuals at these bars identified, and that's why law enforcement is looking for more information. The second person I want to talk about is a potential client of TJ's if he was in fact a marijuana dealer. Although this scenario to me is highly unlikely because we don't have any phone activity, I'll just still play it out for you. Maybe he's meeting up with someone, or maybe he's going around soliciting people for something, and during that time, this individual realizes that TJ has marijuana or money on him, there's a robbery, an altercation, TJ gets hurt, and then the rest kind of transpires after that. We also have to think about the stranger, just this random act of violence where someone's driving or walking down the road, they see TJ in a vulnerable state. Maybe this individual is someone who's done this before, maybe this is their first time, but they see a victim of opportunity. They capitalize on it and they're able to hurt TJ and get him inside a vehicle before anybody notices. We never want to rule out the possibility that this could be a much bigger thing that we're talking about here. Could there have been a potential serial killer in that area who was lurking in the background looking for someone who was leaving a bar by themselves in an intoxicated state? That is the type of person that these individuals would look for. And unfortunately, with TJ leaving the bar on his own and walking south away from the business district, he may have put himself in a really dangerous situation, and this individual took advantage of that. And just to play off that, this stranger doesn't have to be a serial killer. From what we know, if we're to believe everything, TJ had been in two altercations that night, so clearly he was not in the best of moods. Could he have been walking down the road and maybe started talking to someone? Maybe there was a confrontation, an argument, and TJ just happened to pick the wrong guy, and it escalated and something went south and TJ got severely hurt or even killed during that altercation. That is also possible, and it could explain why this case still hasn't been solved. Another person we have to be on the lookout for is the random drunk driver. I know that investigators dismiss this theory, but I wouldn't necessarily be as quick to do so. I could see a world where TJ was walking down the road and maybe stumbled into the street and someone who had been drinking didn't stop in time and struck TJ and killed him. And now this person, who didn't intend on hurting TJ, now finds himself with a very difficult decision. They can report this to authorities, which will obviously have severe consequences and maybe a loss of their own freedom, or they can take TJ, get rid of his phone, and then dispose of his body later and hope that they're not caught. I know where detectives are coming on this one. No skid or yaw marks, no broken taillights or headlights, no sign of blood anywhere. But there could be a couple things going on here. Maybe they just didn't find the crime scene, or maybe there was none of that evidence left behind. Both scenarios are possible. And then the final person that I want to discuss is obviously the people that were at the bar. I do agree with law enforcement that these individuals more than likely were not involved. We know that they weren't physically involved. They were accounted for. But is there a world that maybe one of their acquaintances called some friends of theirs? And if it's true what we're hearing, that TJ slapped a woman, that would definitely piss some people off. And we are in Texas, so you could have a situation where some people did not take kindly to that and decided to wait for TJ outside the bar. And when he decided to walk away and got far enough down the road, they decided to retaliate for what he did inside the bar for the people that were still there. I would think during polygraph exams and during their investigation that law enforcement would be able to look into the individual's phone records to see if this was possible. But if we're looking at a scenario where, again, as I just said, it was someone who was on the outskirts, maybe not the woman or the person she was with, but maybe someone who was just there as an acquaintance who called someone, if they haven't identified everyone who is at the bar, that's still a plausible scenario. So I'm sure they're still looking into that, and that's why they want to try to identify everyone. I will say that it's a little frustrating that at this point, law enforcement hasn't identified everyone who was in the bar, but I completely understand it. There could have been 20, 30, maybe 100 people in there for all we know, and it's not like they're keeping a list of everyone inside. Yes, they have surveillance. I'm assuming it wasn't that well lit. So it would probably be very difficult to have a positive identification of every single patron that was at the bar that evening. And that's all I have for the perspective. I actually could go even further here, but I feel like I would just be complicating things even more. I do apologize if it wasn't as smooth as some of my other perspectives. These were more thoughts that I had and I was writing down as I was reviewing the different reports, the different writings, and then obviously watching the video and listening to the podcast. It kind of got all jumbled in my head, but I hope that I laid it out in a way that you're able to follow it. The big takeaway here is we need more information. We need to know everyone who was at the bar that night, and maybe someone who was in the area saw something that may crack open this case. And it's still relatively new. Yes, it's been 12 years, but most of the people that were there that night are probably still around. So if you or someone you know was in the area during that evening, you need to come forward and try to help us solve this case. So as always, I'll give you a quick recap. TJ Murray was last seen at 12:37 a.m. on October 19th, 2011, walking south from Rookie Sports Bar on Sawdust Road in Spring, Texas. At that time, TJ was 5 feet 6 inches tall and weighed approximately 140 pounds. He has blue eyes and short blonde hair. When he disappeared, he was wearing a red t-shirt with a white Hollister bird logo, khaki shorts, gray sneakers, and a dark-colored baseball cap. Anyone with information in TJ's case can call the Montgomery County Sheriff's Office at 936-760-5876 or submit an anonymous tip to the Montgomery County Crime Stoppers at 1-800-392-7867. My final words go out to the Murray family, specifically Thomas Sr., Janelle, and James. You guys have been through more tragedy than any family should have to endure. And as you've said, even though you've experienced a lot, you at least know what happened to most of your loved ones other than TJ. So the least we can do is get you that justice, is get you those answers. And I'm here to tell you that relative to cold cases, this case is still somewhat new. And the people involved are still out there. That includes witnesses and also the suspects. So I'm really hoping that someone decides to do the right thing and come forward and provide that piece of the puzzle that will finally give us the full picture of what happened to TJ. You guys deserve that. And most importantly, TJ deserves that. And now that we're all aware of this case, you are not alone. We will be fighting right alongside you until you get those answers. Until that time comes, that's going to do it for me, guys. Everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal.
Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.